Last fall, after Rolling Stone published her blockbuster expose, A Rape on Campus, this was reporter Sabrina Rubin Erdley on PBS NewsHour.
When I first encountered Jackie, I was absolutely shocked by her story. She went to the administration and told them that she had been gang raped at a fraternity house by seven men while two others watched. And the administration did nothing about it.
Erdley's story described not only an unspeakable assault on the student called Jackie in a fraternity house at the University of Virginia, but the administration's foot-dragging and the prevailing culture of rape on the venerable Charlottesville campus. What immediately followed, however, was skepticism. After inquiries from the Washington Post and Slate, the big story began to unravel. Early this week, the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism released a 12,000-word postmortem commissioned by Rolling Stone, which is a thorough impeachment of the narrative from top to bottom.
Developing off the top at 11, Rolling Stone accused of journalistic failure for the debunked UVA rape story.
Columbia found that the crusading reporter gullibly accepted Jackie's demonstrably porous story, a gruesome tale that happened to validate Erdley's reportorial premise. Along the way, Columbia concluded, Erdley violated basic rules of reporting, casually indicted individuals and institutions without giving them a fair hearing, and, along with her editors, neglected to cross-check damaging assertions and intentionally withheld key information from readers. Though it has now officially retracted A Rape on Campus, Rolling Stone incredibly continues to shift blame onto the troubled Jackie and claim its editorial practices are fundamentally sound. Erdley will still write for Rolling Stone. Nobody has been suspended or fired. To Siva Vaidyanathan, a media studies professor at the University of Virginia, little has been accomplished because, he says, the Columbia J School report glosses over the damage done to individuals, to his university, and most of all, to actual victims of campus rape.
There was real human damage done at the University of Virginia. There were students who, for weeks, could not make sense of the fact that all of a sudden, the place they considered home, their alma mater, seemed vicious, dangerous, cold, that their fellow students, it seemed, were callous in the face of such degradation and pain, that their administrators seemed, as the Rolling Stone article accused them, caring more about the reputation of the university than the pain of a young woman. I mean, those were such over-the-top charges. And coming from a venerable journalistic institution and being written so powerfully with such a sure voice, that generated so much anxiety and so much internal conflict at the university.
The university community includes faculty, students, administration, the local physical community of Charlottesville, and the Commonwealth of Virginia as a whole, and of course, tens of hundreds of thousands of alumni, all of whom were, I assume, horrified by Rolling Stone's report.
In the first few weeks after the Rolling Stone article broke, and before it fell apart at the hands of the Washington Post and some real reporting, I had a number of long conversations with alumni, both through social media and in real life. And they were angry at their alma mater. They were deeply hurt. They were calling the president's office. They were withholding donations. They were demanding immediate action. The faculty were also part of that, too. I mean, the faculty were very aggressive in challenging the administration to explain itself, again, in a moment when the administration was very limited in what it could say, and frankly, in terms of public relations, basically botched the first 2 weeks of the emergency by being sort of ham-handed and lawyerly in the process. Interestingly, the students I talked to at that moment were the ones who raised the first questions about the veracity of the story. They pointed out to me, for instance, you know, fraternities and sororities rush in the spring at UVA, not in the fall. Why would that event have been in the fall? And because a lot of people knew Jackie, there were some suspicions about her state of mind, but nobody wanted to go so far as to say she fabricated, of course. And there were lots of other questions about the students who were supposed to be her friends, who acted so cold and only concerned with their social standing and their invitations to fraternity parties. To my students, that sounded so off, so untrue, that planted seeds of doubt.
This story did not take place in a vacuum, and it's not as though Eardley chose University of Virginia at random. There is a history that the university has to reckon with, including a song that Eardley wrote about titled Rugby Road, which is kind of a celebration of co-ed rape. Never let a Virginia man an inch above your knee. He'll take you to his fraternity house and fill you full of beer, and soon you'll be the mother of a bastard cavalier. As a journalist, to discover something like that, what more delicious kind of confirmation can you have of your premise? But
none of my students have ever heard those noxious verses of the Rugby Road song. Some of them had heard that they existed. None of them had ever sung it. None of the a cappella groups sing those verses. That was sort of bizarre, and I think that was one of the things that drove students to think there was something a little bit off. They're just not part of the culture, or at least haven't been for a couple of decades. You know, look, the University of Virginia was founded by a slaveholder. Slaveholding and rape depended on each other. And so we have to constantly acknowledge that the history of the University of Virginia is one of brutality. We have to do so much better. And part of doing better is recognizing when we have changed. And one of the ways we've changed is nobody sings those verses anymore.
Siva, women are at risk. Young women are at risk. Young women on campus where there is lots of beer and randy young men are at risk. Those are kind of stipulated and are at the bottom of Rolling Stone's crusading attempts to draw light on a structural problem in society. It reminds me that we often hear the notion of, even from journalists, of a greater truth, an emotional truth that trumps the facts. I want to ask you, Professor Vaidyanathan, in an attempt to find a kind of poster child for the abuse of young women on campus, has Rolling Stone found a poster child for the danger of letting the so-called larger truth trump the facts?
To tell a story of a larger truth, you really have to build it up from a set of bricks that contain nuggets of actual truth. You also have to seek the truth rather than impose it. You can't walk into a reporting project convinced that you know what you're talking about and that everything you're about to relate fills in and supports the premise with which you started. If you do that, you're very likely to be led astray in little or big ways. But, you know, in this case, the fight for the larger truth is ultimately undermined to such a degree that now the Rolling Stone article is ammunition in the fight for a larger lie.
Siva, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Siva Vaidyanathan is a media studies professor at the University of Virginia.